Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to another Absolutely Intercultural show. This is show number 239, coming to you from Denmark. My name's Anne Fox, and last week I was in Belgium, in the beautiful city of Leuven, for the CETAR Congress. CETAR stands for the Society for Intercultural Education, Training and Research, and their biannual Congress is a very friendly affair. Of course, a Congress is always very diverse, forgive the pun, and in addition, diversity was one of the main themes of the Congress this year. So today's show is also very diverse. If you're listening to this from our website at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, then you will see a beautiful image of the Gothic Town Hall of Leuven. This is where we had the opening reception to the Congress, and this is also where we heard the Mayor of Leuven, Mohamed Redouani, give a very inspirational talk about what you can do at local level to make people feel valued and included. Unfortunately, I didn't ask him to be on the podcast, but we do have an interesting variety of people for you in the next 25 minutes or so. We'll be looking at what happens when a lecture hall for 500 people in a Syrian university actually has 4,000 people in it.
I remember once I was standing and I'm writing on the back of my friend, so I'm putting my book in like my notebook on his back to write what I have to study for the exam.
We'll be hearing how an intercultural trainer tackles this challenge.
We decided this year not to have any technology, so no PowerPoints, no presentations, just workshops and interactivity. So the challenge with that is that that takes time. If you do workshop activities with people, that takes time.
I'll just add that Adrian's brief was to help participants learn more about intercultural communication and then leave you to think about what you would do with 30 minutes and no technology to meet that brief. And we'll also be hearing about how you can use the free Diversify Denmark game to help refugees and natives meet. Lina, my project partner, reveals one of our secrets to making sure that the game goes well.
And we draw a card from the pile, which we have carefully stacked so that certain cards were in the top. The most easy to talk about cards would be in the top.
I was walking along the corridor with Syrian Mohamed Antar in the University of Leuven, the location of the Congress, when he suddenly observed to me that European universities are really good learning environments. What did he mean, I wondered? Let's go absolutely educational.
Let me just give a bit of context about like the education system back in Syria, like from where I came and what I saw in Europe, even though I did not studied yet in Europe, but what I was working with the Sciences Po Refugee Help. It's one of the biggest university in Paris, and I was responsible of our session of awareness raising about the immigrant and refugee in Paris. So I was sent to university in France to visit the student and talk about the issues of refugees and immigrants. And throughout my visit, I noticed some different stuff that we like here in Europe that you have, and oh my God, from where I have to start, I really don't know. Education in Syria has never been considered as a hub for development to people. It's more about receiving the information and like learning it by heart, and not to be a creative person or like. You just have to study word by word, saving it, and go to the exam. You know, the system is like that. You go, you have a book, you study it letter by letter. Then at the end of the year, you go, you have an exam, and you study. One of the things, that, for me, I found it very ridiculous to put it in the education system, that we have a subject called nationalism. This is like when we have the former president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, Hafez al-Assad, he said a quote, regardless of what the quote, and imagine that one of the tests that we have, and it's very important, it's like mathematics, it's like physics, it's a very important subject. We have like the president quote saying the life is good, for instance. We will have in an exam, we will have the question says, in the day of our holy president said this word, and they will put you an empty space to continue what the president said. You have to fill in the gap of the statement that he made. And I found this kind of very ridiculous to put it in education. Plus, if I can just go back in my memories and like remember how I was in the university, you will have a room for a hall for a 500 student or 200 student, but you will see inside like 5,000 or like 4,000 student. I remember once I was studying and I'm writing on the back of my friend, so I'm putting my book in like my notebook on his back to write what I have to study for the exam. And I found, and this is I don't think this is healthy for any kind of student to shine or to improve or to be to have some sort of creativity in his or her thinking. So I don't think this is a proper way to have a good education. This is one of many. If I can add another, that's for instance, there is a systematic cheating system. So like you can go to the exam and you might pay to the person who watching the students, you might pay him a couple of dollars, and you might enter with a small book inside the room and start to work on it easily like that. You also have for instance here, but once I was attending a kind of a lecture in Sciences Po in the university, and I found there is possibility to discuss and challenge the doctor if there is this kind of information, if there is any kind of misinformation. You know, I found that this is possible to have a debate with the doctor in terms of what you agreed on and what you don't agree on. If you ever dare to do such a things back at home, you might risk for yourself will never be graduated, and you will always be having a failure, no matter what, if he hates you. So the stuff is like the doctor takes the issue of like improving yourself or your creativity as a challenge. You never be supposed to challenge the information that you get, which is like you can imagine how frustrating will be to learn something that you cannot even discuss about, you know. And one of the things also that I'm not going to mention the basic, that there is a punishment of hitting with the stick on your hand. I'm not going to go into this basic issue that
at
this
university?
Is always exist.
Does this happen at university?
It happened from the primary to the high school, to the high school, to when you are 18 years old. And you might get slapped in university. Yes, possible. Once or twice, if there is a situation, you might get slapped. Yes, I mean, don't think that this is, well, this is rare, right? It is likely, but rarely, but happen. So I cannot say that's never happened. It happened, and for instance, there is a lot of gap in terms of technology in the education system, a lot of gap, and people have just to save and then go to the exam and do this, which is, there is zero space for any student to have his own thinking or his own creativity to improve himself. Plus we graduate from the university without knowing how to write an email, for instance, because you always know how, you always have a block of thought, like you have a step 1, 2, 3 step, that you save this by heart and you write it. But in terms of like writing an email, building your own capacity in terms of how to approach, like for instance, different job or different application, zero knowledge of this will be exist. Yes, you will have the knowledge of the book, which is presented in front of you, and that will be it. That's it. There is nothing else.
When you're at a congress, you're constantly having to make choices about which session to choose next. And sometimes you get the feeling that it's impossible to make a choice because everything sounds enticing. Adrian Pilbeam of LTS Training and Consulting in Bath in the UK had a session entitled What Can You Do in 30 Minutes? But I decided to attend a work-related session instead. What was your session about? I asked him. His response was like a masterclass in intercultural training, talking us from the brief, the different options he considered, through to what he did, and the follow-up. It suddenly struck me that we've never heard this on the podcast before, so let's go absolutely meta and hear this deconstruction of a 30-minute workshop session.
I was asked by a European market research company if I would be able to run a series of half-hour, 30-minute workshops. By I mean a series, I mean the same workshop five times because there were a lot of people, and that they were going to, they had about 120 employees would be gathered from across Europe, and that they were each going to take part in five different workshops. Mine was going to be on changing communication needs. And the I'll just read you what the brief was. So, given the importance of nonverbal communication, how can we adjust our communication style to meet the changing needs of our business as the world becomes ever more global and ever more remote? How do we encourage participation and interactivity on calls? How do we maximize the face-to-face time that we do have? What cultural nuances should we be aware of? So those were the questions that they wanted to be addressed in a half hour. And then the desired outcomes were, coming out of the session, we would like delegates to feel that they have more tools in their box, their toolbox, to communicate with our clients and with each other. We want them to feel they've learned something tangible that they can start practicing the next day. We would also like them to feel energized about the workshop experience. Fun is a key theme for the day. So a fairly tall order in half an hour.
yes, I am in awe that you took this on.
They it was slightly helped by the fact that they said, well, we've decided this year not to have any technology. So no PowerPoints, no presentations, just workshops and interactivity. So that that immediately sort of focused my, gave me a focus that this was not going to be presentation, it had to be interactive. Of course, the challenge with that is that that takes time. If you do workshop activities with people, that takes time. So I thought about it, and obviously I had to think, the main focus was on international communication, communicating across cultures, but communication, and also communicating at a distance and sometimes without face-to-face or video conferencing facilities. So I decided, and this was an option, to not to have any chairs. I had a discussion with the client about furniture, and they said, whatever you want, no chairs would be good. So an empty room, basically. Wow. Because people coming in, sitting down, that all takes time. And if you want them to get up and do something, move around, then they've got to move the chairs about, and that takes time. So I thought, well, let's just get rid of the chairs completely. It's only half an hour. If it was a whole day, that would be different. No chairs. I had a couple of tables for various things, but basically a big empty room. And I had four flip charts, two pin boards. And the idea then was to do, I thought, what can I do that would be useful? What can I achieve? It's got to be activities, but there's got to be a debrief of the activities. There's got to be a result, a takeaway. And I thought through various things and then timed them in my head and thought, no, that's too long, that won't work. So in the end, I fixed on three activities which had to take 10 minutes each maximum. And the first one was what I call the two verb activity. Don't know if you're familiar with it, which is when you ask people in pairs to talk to each other, or mainly one person tells the other. And I said, just tell them about your journey to the hotel this morning. How did you get here? Step by step. But every time you use a verb, you have to use a second verb with a similar meaning. So in other words, I got up, left my bed at 7 o'clock. I had breakfast, ate breakfast, and so on. So they got them to do that. And then after about a minute, 2 minutes, one person has to switch around. Now the other person does similar. And so they did that. All took about 5 or 6 minutes, setting up and doing. And then I debriefed it as to what is the learning point. You know, why did I ask you to do that? What's the point of doing it? And in each case, there was someone, at least one person, who came up with what the key learning point is, which is to, it puts the native English speaker in the position of what it's like when you're speaking English as a foreign language and you're searching sometimes for words. You have to slow down. People have to be patient with you as you're looking for words and so on. So it was just to highlight that. There are a couple of other learning points, such as, you know, sometimes it's good to find a second, an alternative way of expressing something in case people haven't understood the first time. So that was a quick activity, very much on the focus of international communication using English. Everyone was involved straight away. And then I moved on to perhaps a more conventional activity, which is where you have a series of questions. And I had two questions, divided the group into four smaller groups. And so there were two groups dealing with the same question and then two groups dealing with the second question. And the first question was, what are the challenges when working and communicating with people from other cultures? And the second question, what are the challenges of working remotely with other cultures using tools such as Zoom, for example, and Skype and WebEx? And they came up with a series of responses, very good list. And then we summarized what were the key points of interest that came up from both questions. And then we moved on to the last activity, which was actually what you do, what can you learn from all this and how can you apply it? And that is, what are the strategies for success that you would recommend for communicating when communicating remotely across cultures? Now, what will make that go better? I divided them into two teams and they had a series of blank cards. And on each card, they had to write out an idea and to put it on the pin board. And the team that got the most ideas were the winners, if you like. And both teams, each case, so that made 10 teams. There were five groups, two teams per group, so that was 10 teams. And each team produced between, 17 and 20 ideas. So when you add all that up, that's almost 200 ideas. Of course, there was a lot of overlap. But that was the outcome, if you like, the learning that some of them, in a way, it was pooling all their suggestions, which they had already, but maybe one or two ideas had been triggered by the previous activities. And then I took photos of all the charts and pin boards and afterwards wrote it all up, summarized it and sent it off to the client so they could send the joint ideas from all the groups, obviously eliminating duplication. Mm. And all of that got done in half an hour. Well, not the writing up, but the actual generation of all the ideas. And then they moved off and the next group came in and I started again.
I think it would be a great exercise to deconstruct that process and use it as a guideline if you ever need to plan an intercultural training session yourself. I particularly like the two verb exercise. So now to our final segment, where I talk to Lina Mark-Ruholt about a project she and I have been working on for the past couple of years, and which we were able to present during the Congress. We've talked to the creator of the Diversify Culture Game, George Simons, on the podcast before, and you may remember that George started an initiative to adapt the game to promote integration between natives and migrants when the current refugee crisis started in 2015. Lina and I worked on a Danish version which had a very specific purpose, to help refugees and native Danes meet in order to create the connections necessary for everyday life. I asked Lina to describe a typical session with our new game. We tried it out 4 times before we got the mix right, but in each case we would always invite a mix of people to a social event that included free food and a relaxed, egalitarian atmosphere. Let's go absolutely Diversify.
Well, first of all, you would come into the place where we would have the game played. And so you would have some different tables to sit at. You would maybe be directed by the facilitators to mix the groups so that we've got both Danes and migrants, refugees in the groups. We might also mix people so that we are sure that we've got some people who know both the migrant or refugee language and Danish, because we found out that language is very important when you have to have a dialogue, of course. So on the table, you would find some warm-up cards with questions, which were more like, is there any kind of food that you all like? Which places have you visited in your holidays? So trying to build a common ground. I mean, you weren't supposed to take these, but it was optional if you didn't really know what to talk about. Then we would introduce the game, the facilitators. We would introduce the game, the rules, and start the game. Ask participants to start. And they draw a card from the pile, which we have carefully stacked so that certain cards were in the top. The most easy to talk about cards would be in the top. And we would play for a while. I think we played around 3/4 of an hour. After that, we would say, so now the game is finished. And we would ask participants, all the participants, to write either a wish, or first we would debrief the game and ask them whether they learned something new about their own culture and some of the other cultures or some of the other participants. And then we would go to the last part, which was the wishing and giving tree. So if you had something you wanted to give, you could write it on a note and put your phone number. If you had something you could wish, for example, you might wish to come for a Syrian coffee at a Syrian family's home, or an Afghan refugee might want to learn to have someone to talk to. So we could all put our wishes and giveaways on a small post-it and put it on the tree. And then hopefully after the game, people could find some wishes they could fulfill. That was the whole thought of it.
You can get a free digital copy of the game from the Diversify website, and you can find the link to that on our blog. Well, that was just a very small taste of the wonderful people who were at the CIATAR Congress in Leuven. If you go to our website at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, you'll find links to CIATAR, the Diversify game, and much more. You can also follow us on Facebook, where we share interesting links several times a week. And of course, feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes. The next show will be coming to you from Germany with Dr. Laurent Borgmann on July the 5th. So until then, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.